What up, man? This is your boy Al Mega. Welcome to a brand new Comic Crusader special. And first up, let me introduce my homie is going to be riding with me on an interview today. He is the boss of, you know, he's on Sloppy Spoilers. He's on Cinema Crusaders. He is the creator of Mr. Happy. Let me introduce the one only Mr. Jeff Racy. What up, how you doing, homie?
Hey, it's a good time to be here, man. It's been too long since we've been together to do one of these interviews. I'm really looking forward to it because this is an awesome movie with an awesome actress.
Oh, it is. She's absolutely amazing. She kicks ass in this film, but she's kicked ass in a lot of places. I mean, before we even bring her on, we got a little a reel that I would love to show off so you guys can start getting like, yeah.
Little teaser, a little appetite wetter before we get to the
movie. There we go. Let's get it done. Check this out, folks.
Do you want to play? I love you. It's okay. You don't have to take it back.
You move, I empty your fucking brains on the floor.
Well, that's not good.
There's a difference between doing what's right and doing the right thing.
You wouldn't be who you are if it wasn't for me.
Go to hell.
You're gonna kill me? You know the world hates an ambitious man.
So why don't we join forces?
Are we done?
What are you guys baking in these labs?
What do you really want, Nix?
Do your fucking job so people like me don't have to do it for you.
No heroes, just survivors. The last man standing. I did the job. You couldn't.
Woo! Meander, you see this introducing actress, singer, model Nina Bergman is in the building. Thank you for coming on, Nina, and rocking out with us to talk about what you've been doing, that awesome film reel, and this fire movie, Cold Meat, that's out there. I mean, oh my gosh.
Dive in. When I see that film reel, especially seeing you do these kind of cyberpunky and goth things, I want to see you play Tank Girl now.
Yes. I love her.
Let's make that happen.
You just absolutely kill that.
Nina is perfect for Tank Girl. Jeff, I think you have just found the ideal Tank. Hollywood, you here? Baby, let's do that. So, welcome to Comic Crusaders. We definitely love to have our origin story. So, Nina, tell us a bit about yourself. Where you originally from? And what was the first thing in fandom that you fell in love with that inspired you on the journey you're on?
I'm born and raised in Denmark, and my dad is Russian. So I went to school in Russia, but I grew up in Denmark. And, you know, my dad is a professor at the Danish film school, so I wasn't really allowed to watch a lot of TV or listen to any pop music. It had to be quality music. And the first movie that I saw in the theaters were Thelma and Louise. Well, I came to America, and the first thing I did with my first big check was buying a Thunderbird, of course.
Well done.
Yeah. No, I've always been a performer. I always knew my calling. I didn't know if it was going to be music, acting, dancing, but I knew, you know, I had to express myself. Otherwise, I would just explode. And yeah.
So where did you get your start, though? Was it there in Denmark or when you came over to the States?
I left Denmark when I was 14. I got a scholarship to a musical theater school in London. And then I was there going to school and started working as a backup dancer with bands. Then I went to Moscow to the Bolshoi Theater as a prima ballerina. I was a prima ballerina, hence the footwork for boxing, you know?
Hey.
Ability for kicking and it helps. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about some of that because digging into your past there, like you have really done a little bit of everything and been all over the place. I mean, your grandfather is a very famous Russian actor. And if let's see if I can say this name properly. Pavel.
That's good. Kadashnikov.
You know, I had it earlier and I forgot. Started talking because I was having so much fun talking to you. And you actually traveled around with your gypsy grandparents for a while.
Like, I did.
Are they Romani or the Roma people?
They are. They are Roman. They're Russian Romans. So, yeah. So my grandmother has like dark skin, mm-hmm. you know, she's like the black hair and dark skin. And I came out Danish looking.
And yeah, that like when I look at your list of accomplishments, that like this wide, eclectic artistic background, I wonder if like that traveling lifestyle played into that any.
I think so. I mean, I have a hard time staying in one place, you know, and watching, you know, touring around with my grandmother starting at 4 years old and performing. I just, you know, I was just kind of born into it and I never had a choice. You know, I was one of those kids. Like if I didn't perform, I would go and perform in the streets. I'd choreograph a little dance with my ghetto blaster and go dance in the streets.
Oh my gosh, you said ghetto blaster. Oh my God, that's it. She's my homie for life. She's using the right words over here. Are you sure you're not a New Yorker? You know what I mean? Where if I love it.
I love the fact that even though, you know, you've been working in movies for a while, that you have this love of the theater that keeps bringing you back to the stage as well.
Yeah, theater is my true love, but yeah. Making money doing that, it's hard. And you know, it's, you know, six, you know, I've done a lot of theater and it's like, you know, 6 months, the same show, yeah. You know, 8 shows a week. So it's, you know, in the movies is a little more exciting and it's more diverse, but theater is my true love. I mean, there's nothing better than being on the stage and feeling the people and, you know, yeah. That's that
you feel that circuit of energy between you and an audience and there's nothing else like it.
So. No. You feed off of them. We feed off of each other.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, how do you balance your time and creative energy between acting, singing, modeling, doing everything you're doing? The Bergman real estate.
Well, it's, you know, I don't have much of a life. I don't have a TV. I don't watch TV. I only watch TV.
You kept to this as a kid? You were taught as a kid not to appreciate TV on that level. Mm-hmm. So you kind of kept that into adulthood.
Yeah, I kept that. Yeah, I don't watch TV. I'll only watch if I have an audition or I'm doing something to get the feel of it. But I don't watch TV, and I think it stifles my creativity.
No, I can appreciate that because I know actors who don't like to watch movies because they don't want to dilute what they might do. They don't want to be influenced by other people's work so much.
Yeah, it's like if I did a couple of years ago, like a World War II movie, and everyone was like, whoa, you got to watch all these World War II movies. And I was like, absolutely not. I'm going to go to museums. I'm going to read all the stories. I want to interview all the people, and I want to do it from the inside out and not from the outside in.
I love that authenticity about that. I love that approach.
Yeah.
That's real. See, that's being, I think, a real artist there, when you kind of really take that type of view on what's popping. I am digging it.
So I want to get into that a little bit more later, but there's one more thing I got to ask you before getting into the movie projects a bit, because this also leads into like asking you questions about like the shoot and character and things. One thing that I was very delighted to see, because I'm a great fan of this man's work, Terrence Zanuck, and it says here that you worked on the soundtrack for Repo: The Genetic Opera. Tell me a little bit about that. Because I'm geeking out just finding out that.
Well, it was one of those stories where I just came to LA from New York, you know, I booked the part. It was like a 3-octave part. I had to sing like 3-octave. I'm operatically trained, you know, musical theater. And I had to dance. It was a very challenging part. I booked the part with a Japanese artist named Yoshiki, was doing the music from X Japan, who I worked with. A big superstar in Japan was doing the music. And then there was some problems with the casting. They needed a name, and I got replaced by Paris Hilton. And then they used a lot of my voice. So it was one of those things, like I just came to Hollywood, and I was like, oh, I see how it is.
Wow.
But I had wondered if Paris was actually doing her own singing.
Oh, well, they blend it. You know, I hate to like, I'm not trying to talk bad or anything, you know.
No.
You're talking bad, but that's how the stuff works. And I think that they made an awful mistake there. Because my God.
Yeah, but they needed, that's how you sell movies in Hollywood. It's with the names. Yeah. I was so green. I just came. I auditioned a billion times. I was perfect for the part. But, you know, I was brand new. I didn't have a name.
Yeah, it happens.
I have the octaves. I have the talent.
But... All right. So how do you feel about that? Because, again, you know, you're trying to break in, right? And they use that excuse, oh, but you're not nobody. But unless they give you the opportunity, how can you ever be someone? So how do you overcome that obstacle, you know, and kind of prove yourself, if you will?
What I did was, you know, I went to college to get some credibility, and that's where I boxed. I started boxing to make extra money on the side get it. So I went to
What a crazy hustle. He said it's a side hustle. Oh my God, Nina scares me. He said it's a side hustle. I'm about to just beat motherfuckers up. You know what I mean?
I didn't know I had the talent, and I was a very angry teenager. And, you know, I had the endurance and the stubbornness and the rage. So it worked for me at the time. And then, you know, so that helped kind of get in the door coming from NYU. And then, you know, how I dealt with it was, as a boxer, I learned about Nine Inch Nails, and I started singing in rock bands. I did industrial rock. So I started touring, and then I'll be on the road screaming my heart out, and then I'll come back, try again, keep doing it. And then when I couldn't take it anymore, I would go with my band on the road for 3 to 6 months and do my music until I signed a big record deal, you know, and then I couldn't do the acting there for a while. Yeah.
Did you ever get to meet Trent Reznor by any chance?
No, I worked with everyone around him, you know, from Atticus, Michael Patterson to Mix It to, you know, it's all, you know, kind of the same people in that, you know, but they say don't meet your idols.
Yeah. 9 degrees of Trent Reznor.
So I've worked pretty much with everyone just that he was around, but not him. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you one other thing. I noticed, if I'm not mistaken, looking at your reel, I think I saw Daniel Bernhardt and also a Lick Grunner. And as a martial arts geek, I love seeing these martial arts. And like, you're working with two of my favorites in some of these projects. Did they give you some pointers? Like, I know, I understand you had the dancing background and the boxing background, but did they help teach you anything cool as far as like that kind of stunt work?
Well, I was very lucky. I did Hell Hath No Fury, a movie, World War II movie with Jesse Johnson, a big action director.
Looking forward to seeing that one.
Yeah. So I star in that, and Daniel Bernhardt is my co-star. Mm-hmm. He plays I play a French resistance fighter, and he plays a SS officer we have a love affair for me to gather information out of him. But then we started training together because I had a project where I needed to learn martial arts. And I started training with 8711, which is like one of the biggest stunt teams, the one that John Wick and the Matrix. And
They're like the Western equivalent of the Jackie Chan stunt team.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So Daniel is part of that. So they started training me, and Daniel was like, wow, you are a natural. And I was like, well, a natural. I've been a ballerina since I was 4 and, you know, done in my whole life. So we started training together. And then we just did a movie in Budapest that's coming out in May with Aaron Eckhart called Cheap Station. Yes.
Hey.
So I can find it now because they just announced it. And then I just got the offer today of a movie I am dying to talk about. I just did a chemistry test with him and got it. And he plays a very famous old character that they're revamping. Uh-oh. And I'm like the warrior that... I was like, can we just sign the contract so I can talk about it, because you guys would really appreciate it.
Oh my God, don't make me start thinking and start guessing here on comic book properties that, you know, because, you know, based on action. Stop it. Don't make me start speculating.
I'm kind of hoping it's like, I know there's already a Red Sonja in the works, but now I'm kind of hoping it's like Conan and Red Sonja.
Conan, Red Sonja, Cena.
It's close. Like, I get introduced in this one, and then in the sequel, there's going to be more of me.
Okay. Something for the future. Something for the future.
So I just played something where I had to be super skinny, so now I'm going to start training again.
All right. Let me ask you here, though, because you mentioned, you know, the dancing, the acting and all. And I know, for example, like, I'm an old school karate flick fan, you know what I mean, watching my as a kid Kung Fu Theater at 3 o'clock when I was 12 years old, and then understanding that grew up, you know, they were also really basically dancers, and it was all choreography. So were you aware how important choreography and dancing was to being an action star?
I had no idea until I knew I learned all the choreography very fast. I would work with a lot of you know, stunt coordinators and like Art Camacho, who was big in that industry too. And they would all be very surprised because they would show me routines and I pick it up. I'll be in Bulgaria. I would do Doom, the movie Doom from the video game. And they would show me these local routines and I would just pick it up. Like, you know, and I didn't know how important the dance background was until I met Daniel. And he was like, the boxing is actually very bad because everything in boxing is so tight. And on camera, everything needs to be big and exaggerated, you know, and I'm, you know, everything is like in boxing protected.
Yeah, it's like that with every single martial arts. You always have to exaggerate or the layman will never see what you're doing on screen. They can't process it.
Yeah. So it was like a, you know, it's kind of like, I guess, theater acting and film acting. I had to kind of, you know, tweak it.
Dancers make such good people because you don't have to know martial arts to pull it off in the movies. It, of course, helps. But people who have that dance background, you look at Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah.
Because the dancing teaches you rhythm and timing, and that is so essential for the fight choreography so you don't accidentally kick somebody in the face. And I'm sure that's part of what helped you really pick up the moves so fast.
Yeah.
You say Jean-Claude Van Damme, and I think old school Gordon Liu, Master Killer, you know what I mean? You know, the old school, the old Asian martial arts flicks. And then yeah. Like, yo, they were actually dancers and this is what they do. And like, those are my favorite martial arts flicks. And I'd be digging it.
Now, yeah.
I mean, dated. It is dated, but it's kind of fun to watch them do that very static back and forth kind of thing. I'm a fan of like the more realistic flat fighting with a combination of the very flashy sort of Yusha sort of fighting style from like the Kung Fu movies and whatnot.
But I don't want them to beat me up, you know, if I'm not talking right, you know.
Well, let's get into Cold Meat because that's what we're here for.
That's what we're going to do. And thank you for saying that because before we get into it, folks, I have the trailer. That's right, folks. So before we get into the craziness of this movie, because Nina's performance in this is buck wild. Everything that's going on here, it's tense. It's wonderful. You don't believe me? Check this out.
When I was a child,
here you go.
My mother Thank told you. Me that humans are capable of the best and the worst.
I am not done talking!
She was wrong. Some are only capable of the worst. The natives have a legend about those people. A legend as old as the mountains of this region. They say that in time of famine, an evil spirit comes out of the woods to possess those who had cannibalized the flesh of their peers. It appears first in the dreams, but it's already too late for them. They're damned, condemned to become like it. The wandering soul seeking human flesh, always insatiable, never satisfied.
Woo, my gosh! Did you see how tense that trailer was, folks?
Yeah.
My goodness, what is going on? What is Nina going through? Did she really have to deal with all that cold? What the F is going on? Let me tell you, I even told Bracey, I was like, yo, that how this movie ended left me fucked up. Fucked up. I was like, what is going on? Bracey had to be,
I gotta say this for the trailer. Whoever cut that trailer needs like a double bonus because one of my big pet peeves are trailers that ruin the film for me. And this trailer not only intrigued me, which made me want to see the film even more, but it doesn't spoil anything. It is a masterpiece of marketing.
Yeah.
And it gets you involved and like it, this movie could have been so easy to spoil if a lesser talent had cut that trailer.
Yes.
Agreed. So Nina, talk to us about the experience of Cold Meat. What is this film? Because it definitely sounds intriguing. So provide us a brief overview of the film, if you can.
And yes.
Basically your character in it.
Yes. It's very different from what I normally play. I mean, when I first got it, I was like, I don't know. You know, I don't know, because the way my character is dealing with things is not the way I deal. Nina deals with things. Not
the Bergman verse way.
She has a different kind of strength.
You know? I was wondering what attracted you to the role, given your past history.
Well, because number one, it felt like a play. It's by two characters the whole time. It's written like a play.
Mm.
Yeah, so it feels like you're doing a play. And then the second thing that I'm always up for a challenge. You know, I was like, you know, I'm always up for, because she's so different from me. And, you know, I was more like her when I was younger, because I was a little bit of a victim of my circumstances. I had a really rough childhood. I left, you know, home alone very early, you know, out of my parents when I was 12. So I had like kind of a rough, you know, being in England by yourself at 14 with, you know, no parents, and in New York City with $5 in your pocket.
I gotta dig into that a little bit. A young girl, not even, at 14 alone in London. I mean, before we get into the film a little bit, I mean, what was that experience like? I must have been scary because you're a kid.
When you're 14, looking like you're 20, 21, you know, that was me. I look like this at 14.
Are you still 14?
Yeah, no, I'm 15.
Only 1 year has passed, folks.
But I stopped growing kind of at 12, you know, so everyone treated me like an adult. But, you know, at 14, I mean, I was just so happy to be out. You know, Denmark is a very small, safe country. Mm-hmm. And I had very big dreams and I didn't fit in. And I was so curious and, you know, I was fearless. I didn't know, you know, I was like, I was one of those kids that thought I would never make it past 18. So I was like, fuck it. Fuck it. I'm just going to go and I'm never going to make it to past 18. So let's just go.
Just the kind of answer I'd expect from somebody to say like, hey, you know what? I'm going to box for a little extra money.
So I'm saying, don't mess with the Bergman verse. Yeah, yeah, gonna be, you know.
I like the cut of your jib, madam.
You know what I mean? So, shit, can you share any interesting behind the scenes anecdotes or experiences from the movie as you guys were filming? Because again, I mean, were you really in this cold weather?
Yes, we were in Canada shooting. Okay. We were in Canada shooting. So it was freezing, freezing cold. And I do Wim Hof, so I'm pretty tough. You know, I do the ice baths, the cold showers. I believe in all that stuff, right?
That's what keeps it youthful, mama. I see it. Look at that.
It takes inflammation out. You know, you should know if you do martial arts, you know, that, you
roots. She's got them Russian roots. She can handle cold.
I don't like it. That's why I live in California. I don't like it, but it was freezing. I mean, my character was supposed to wear nylons, you know, because I work in a diner and I couldn't
That would have been awful.
My leg. Like literally freeze into my legs. So we had to change my wardrobe.
Mm.
It was rough. And there was a couple of shots in the end of the movie where I was outside for too long. And I mean, my face was frozen. But again, living in Moscow, minus 25 degrees, you know, you touch your earlobe and it will fall off. I mean, your lips crack. Yeah. You had to wear Vaseline on your face.
You see an ice ball comes out, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, so it's like, you know, I feel like once you lived in Moscow, I mean, and went to school there, it's like being a Navy SEAL. Just, you know, it's the same kind of training.
You know what? I think you are a Navy SEAL. Don't be messing with me, Nina. You know what I mean? So let me ask you here, and then you go, Bracey. How do you approach character development when you take on a role?
Beat me to it. I was going to ask you about process.
There we go. So that's our question, Bracey, don't you?
I mean, I believe, you know, if you, I mean, we have it, whatever, you know, we have it all inside of us. It's just whether we're in touch with it or not. And I think with that particular part, I went back to how I used to feel when I was in Denmark, you know, very abusive home. Sitting and hiding in my closet. I remember another little girl just sitting and hiding in my closet and feeling invincible. You know, invisible and no, I just praying someone would find me. And I was a victim of my circumstances and I didn't have a choice. So I had to go there because that's my character, Anna. She's a abusive husband. She lives with her mom. She's a single mom. I have a young daughter and a victim of my circumstances. So that was the first step. I had to go back to how I used to feel as a young girl. And then I would, because it's based on a true story about two serial killers without giving too much away. That so I would watch all of these documentaries and all these serial killers to get, you know.
Yeah. Okay, great. Remind me not to share my address.
Yeah. So I had to like go there. But the biggest thing was to go back. You know, I went there. I changed my diet. You can't see it, but I actually put on a lot of weight. You know, I put on, I think, like 14, 15 pounds. I ate like crap. I felt like crap. I just tried to go there and, you know, because Anna, she doesn't, you know, I do ice baths. I eat super healthy. I train every day. And she's, you know,
I can see the difference in your face just looking at you here.
Yeah. You know, she sits different. She stands, you know, she was like me as a, you know, she just wants to disappear. You know, she just wants someone to come and save her. I know that feeling so well.
You say that, I captured that. You know, there were specific scenes when homie, you know, again, not giving away too much, but the dude,
David.
That's the biggest asshole in the movie. Mm. Like, he really does take out emotion out of the character. And the way you display it, I mean, it is ultra real. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're really going to kill him. You know what I mean? So, you know, thank you for digging in. You know, I mean, I don't know how that feels to be having to dig into some personal hurt to be able to do a performance, you know, and show that to people. I mean, how do you like work that to be able to display yourself in that emotional moment? You know,
you really make yourself quite vulnerable to pull.
Yeah,
those
vulnerable. Things. That's the word. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the better the artist, you know, the more empathy the person have. Hmm. You know, I have so much empathy for other people. I see myself in other people, and I have very thin skin. And the artists that I truly admire in film, music, anything, is the people that have the courage to be authentically themselves unapologetically. So I had to do a lot of work. I mean, I had to go to 12-step programs. I had to turn myself inside out and become completely transparent, because if you're transparent, no one can poke holes at you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as David Goggins says, if you can put your darkest secret on a billboard in your hometown, you're free.
How much does the billboard cost? Let me put that up there.
Heard that quote from him, but that's a good quote.
Yeah. And I feel like that's acting. It's like, I'm a vessel. I am telling this woman's story. Remember, it's based on two true characters. So I feel like, you know, I'm trying to pick parts where I get to live in these people's shoes, where, you know, these situations are taken from real life situations. So I try to go there as much as I could. And I think that's my job as being an artist. I'm just a vessel, and it's not to judge it. Like, I don't judge Anna, you know, in an abusive relationship. I mean, I'm sure I've been, you know.
Her history is pretty dark until she has her kid. So, like,
yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Man,
what up, hey, pops in the building? What up?
We've discussed Anna's vulnerability or weakness, and obviously a lot of her strength comes from her child. But like, was there a further place that you thought maybe a lot of this strength, this change of character she had, might have come from?
Yes, she has a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She has to get back to her daughter. That's her superpower. Mm-hmm. You know, they you know, I read stories about women. Their kid would be stuck underneath a truck and they lifted up the truck. It's physically impossible. But I think when you're a mom, I mean, I don't know, but I had siblings. I think when you're a mom, you get a superpower. Like, and I think Anna, she has a superpower that she didn't know she had. And he gave her that gift. You know, she is a badass because she finds strength. Even though
I really love watching her arc in this.
Yeah.
And especially, like, we can all appreciate that mama bear that comes out. And I have a feeling that when she gets back to the real world, that things are going to be quite different between her and her life in general. And I have this great expectation for her after that. But one of the things I found so intriguing is in this life and death struggle of survival and against the David character, despite having every reason to do so, And nobody would blame her. Nobody would fault her. But Anna never goes there. And I found that particularly interesting that she always attack despite his prodding her.
Yeah. Let me tell you, my friend, if I was your friend and you called me at that moment, I said, you better handle your business, girl. Because I'm like, you got to get it done. Your patience in the film, or at least the character's patience, is absolutely amazing to me. Because, like, nah, this is again why I say you can't have people that look like me in these films, because we're going to get it done real quick. Ain't going to be nothing.
that defeats the whole movie. The whole point is Anna doesn't want to be a monster like him.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. Yeah. And that's the thing about it.
She doesn't, because then she's no better than him. The whole last monologue was about that. You know?
Yeah.
If you want Batman.
Yeah, I absolutely love that about her character. That was a real triumph for me, seeing her, like, she would defend herself, but that's as far as she would go. And yeah, you know, he kept telling, oh, you know, everybody's just like me, given the right circumstance, and she proves him wrong.
Yeah, but all the men in this movie were shitheads, to be honest, because holy shit. Anna's husband or ex or whatever that homie is displayed, I was like, what? Oh my God. Like, you know, there's a particular scene in the restaurant when homie kind of said, you think all of us, you know, you kind of push towards one way, but man, they flipped the script on you in this fucking movie. Let me tell you. And that's what I love about it. It like, not many movies, you know, like you, Nina, I watch things if I have to watch them, you know, based on who I want to speak to, you know what I mean? Yeah. Other than that, I'm just trying to learn my craft better. You feel me?
Yeah.
So, you know, I took the time to watch the film, and yeah, I could not keep my eyes off it. Like, I was trying to work, but I'm just going to just pay attention. Like, this is fire. Your performance, every actor's performance, intriguing. You know, again, characters you could hate, characters you want to root for, things that make you say, what the F? What movies need to be. And I think what you and your team have done overall here is exactly what we as fans are looking for.
Thank you. It was a labor of love. You know, sometimes you do the ones that pay really well, and sometimes you do the one that.
Yeah, given what you put yourself through, it must have been a labor of love, because you're shooting these sub-freezing temperatures in a very confined space. I had to wonder if any of that was shot on a soundstage, because some of the shots that you're getting in the film, it doesn't seem like you could have another person in the vehicle with a camera to get some of the angles that you guys were getting.
You're onto something. We had one car in location and one in the soundstage that was taken apart in order mm-hmm. for the whole camera crew to come in. And that was one of the challenges, for me at least, is to have like a full camera crew this close to you, breathing. I mean, I could smell what they had for lunch.
Oh, God. I hope they didn't eat tuna fish.
And you're talking to a vegan, remember? Yeah, no, it was, you know, it was intense. It was very, it was intense. And then you're in on the soundstage sweating.
Mm. And you're next. Having to wear all these layers, and you're on the soundstage.
Wait, so is that your first time experience also with having cameras up close to you and having that type of kind of claustrophobic acting experience?
No. If you watch, I've done quite a few, but in particular, if you watch Hell Hath No Fury, I am tied to a cross, and they put skulls on my head and shoot them off, and they did clothes on my head, and I'm tied to a cross, what? Little nighty.
And you know, I know early on, Bracey mentioned dropping names, but I also saw a familiar face for a second, like Ron Perlman. You also
were
like,
yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah, what?
Yeah, Ron.
Himself, the beast.
he's the real deal. It was a little intimidating. You know, you're like, oh my God, that's Hellboy. Okay, yeah. All right. Here we go.
That is so cool. I mean, you know, yeah. On your career, you've been doing some stuff. I really can't wait to see what else you do. Because I could see you in multiple roles. Like Marvel DC, she has, look, frame it, yo. She got the superhero, she could move. Because Bracey, I know you want to mention a little bit. It's going back to that Wonder Woman fan from just for a tad, right? Her action sequences were off the effing hook. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. I really love the shots, the appropriate, not overuse of slow-mo a la Zack Snyder, just enough slow-mo. And, you know, you look great in the role. You look powerful. You look confident. You look strong. The costume looked great. You know, even though I can tell it's, you know, obviously not a big budget thing. You got to just put together a nice piece, a proof of concept, perhaps. But, man.
We did it before Wonder Woman. We did it before
that. They fucked up and picked Gal over you.
But it was a different, you know, I was 20 pounds heavier. I walked in, I tested, and they all just looked at me. I had black, long black hair, and I walked in, and they were like, you know, I think they were like, whoa, okay. Okay, you know, they went a different direction. And Gal is perfect for the direction they went. I mean, you know, I had a complete different approach, and it wasn't, you know, what...
When we get the Wonder Woman TV show, Nina, I hope they're looking at you. They're the one bringing the game. When I saw you with that, like breaking something, that flying knee, my God, even I said, oh my God, I blocked.
I love it. It was like that knee is almost in that guy's throat. You really got some. That was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the ballet training paid off, right?
So I got to ask Nina. In your opinion, just so we could, you know, just tell the movie Cold Meat. Like, what sets this apart from other films of the same genre? And what do you hope audiences will find captivating about it?
Well, I think for me, when I saw it, I wasn't sure how the director was going to do it. Because when I read the script, I was like, how the hell is the director going to pull this off? Mm. And I think because he comes from a visual effects background as well, he worked with some of the biggest visual effects artists. I think Sebastian, the director, created like a world. It feels like almost like an art piece, the shots and then that otherworldly element that he put in. So it's just, it feels like an art movie, like a film noir. It's not just a thriller, you know, because it's a psychological thriller. It has all of the stuff about human, you know, behavior and mind, and they're playing this cat and mouse game. And then visually, I thought he did really fantastic because, you know, there's no snow falling and there's no wind when we shot. That's all.
Really?
Yes.
Shit.
Wow. I took that to be practical effects.
But because he's so good and we just acted so good with the wind.
Call me impressed because I have an eye for like practical effects versus CGI. You know, I've been a cinemaphile since I was a wee little from the early 70s, and like
you lad.
Anytime I find out somebody can actually trick me, you know, bravo on that.
Yeah, no, he's really good. He's really good. So I think, you know, he created like an art piece. So it's visually and sonically. We had a private screening at a Dolby Room, an Atmos Room, and the sound hold up. It holds up. And I think a lot of those low-budget movies, the first thing is the sound, the soundtrack, and then the special effects, you know, slightly cringy.
You can forgive low-grade sound effects knowing that somebody's working with X number of dollars for the budget. But nothing says bad movie worse than poor sound design. And this film does not lack in sound design. And like you said, there is a whole atmosphere being created because you're in this white noise bubble, the wind and the snow and the obscurement, which does give it this sort of nightmarish fairy tale quality. And we do have a slight supernatural element. It's never said in the film, but Anna does refer to the legend of the Wendigo.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the frozen cannibal spirit, and like the film didn't actually need it, but I do like that extra layer that it adds to the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt the same. And then I think, I mean, I shot it a while ago, and then I saw it, and I kind of forgot it a little bit, and I was kind of shocked. You know, it takes you by surprise, and I think that's what's different here. You don't actually know what's going to come.
Yeah, exactly. Because I told you at that end, I was like, what the F? I was like, Bracey, what the F is happening? Like, yo, it's crazy. He goes, yeah, dude. Like, wait a minute.
Yeah, because I'm also a trivia nerd, so I just have all the answers. I was like, oh, yeah, that was Wendigo, cannibal spirit of a...
Yeah, that's pretty impressive, you know that. Most people don't.
Yeah, he fucked me up. You mother, I love it. So finally, Nina, you know, I want to take too much more of your time, and I don't want to be killed by the publicists.
we're Not in an hour yet. I still got a couple of questions I'd like
to get. I know, definitely. Well, all right. So you got your two more. I'll give you two more, and then we're going to do the, and then I got the last one. Go ahead, Brace.
All right. First of all, I want to mention your major co-star, Alan Leach. Mm-hmm. Wow, that guy is super impressive. And, you know, watching him go from a guy who looks like a meek guy to an apparent hero.
Yes.
And then when he opens up the trunk, and there's that flat shark-like expression. I even like the fact that he calls himself a shark at one point in the film. Mm-hmm. And then watching the two of you basically trade places, where you know this guy he's this control freak. He's all about all this control, and watching him crumble as Anna becomes stronger. I love watching the inverse. What's it like playing against somebody who is that talented as well?
Well, I'm only as good as my co-star.
Mm.
You know, so it was a lot easier for me because he was very scary, and I would look at him, and I did believe him when we were acting, so I didn't have to, you know, imagine it. It felt like we were doing a play, that we were just, you know, we're on a stage and we're in the scene, and it helped me really be in the scene, and the way they shot it, they did long takes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't a stop, start, you know, line here, line there. We did like full scenes all the way through. And, you know, he comes from that background, you know, he's Irish and, you know, lived in England and been on Downton Abbey for 8 years. And he's just such a pro. And it just made it so much fun. It's kind of like in the band and you're playing with good musicians. It just all clicks, you know, just clicking.
You two have such a wonderful antagonistic chemistry between the two of you. And I can see. I can just watch the two of you feeding off each other like that, and like just the give and take there. And especially because they were such long takes, like, you know, too many modern movies are all about these quick cuts, these quick edits. But I like these long holds. Like, we can really feel the tension and the drama and the character build. And that was fantastic to watch.
Yeah. I'm so glad you got that. I mean, we did have a couple of days of rehearsal, which is rare nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was, you know, we met in Canada for the first time, and I was so nervous. I was like, what about if we don't have chemistry? Like, they need chemistry in order to.
So you knew no one. You got all guys got hired, but never really read together or anything.
Exactly. Yeah. They just made a straight offer. Up in Canada. And I was like,
sink or swim. I'm so happy it worked out because this weird sort of relationship develops as your situation becomes more and more dire, and the two of you who are directly opposed have to come together for survival, even though that's the last thing you want to do. But it all rings true. Everything I saw you two doing really felt like it was present and in the moment. And it has that whole authenticity to it.
Yeah.
Just beautiful piece of work.
Oh, thank you so much.
Overall.
What was that?
How long was the shoot overall?
Shoot.
Yeah.
Are you ready for this?
How long?
Yeah.
13 days.
13 days?
Yeah.
Whoa.
They had to do it fast.
Yeah, it's a long time
before. The budget was going to, you know, special effects, everything. Yeah. Yeah. 13 days, which was crazy.
Shoot.
I mean, crazy. One or two takes on me. He got more takes.
How were your days like, hour-wise?
It was just crazy, and you just got to be super prepared.
It's such a good thing that both of you have that theater background, because that allowed you to do the one for ones, basically.
Yeah, we did full scenes. I mean, if he didn't, you know, that's why I was so scared. What about if I get some TV? I mean, some actor who's just don't know. You know, I've done that in the past where. I just look at my co-star and it just looks like he's taking a dump. And I was like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to cry or having emotion? And they're like, it takes me out as an actor. I'm just standing there looking at it. You know, it's like it took me out.
I remember like everybody has their own process. I remember hearing that Michael Landon used to pull out a nose hair to get tears to come out of his eyes.
A nose hair?
Yeah, like some people can't cry on command. So like that's why you.
But I don't understand that. If you put yourself truly do the research and put yourself in Anna's situation, you'd be scared out of your mind.
But you know what I do to cry on point?
Well, what do you do to get what you want?
I go back into the most saddest moment in my mind of my life. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, if once I hit that moment, I could cry on deck right there.
I just look at what the government's taking out of my paycheck.
Oh, I mean, the Bracey's crying every 2 weeks. So you hit him up every Friday, every 2 weeks is a wrap. He's crying. Yeah.
But I have a final character question for you, Anna. Because I was going to ask you what's up for you next, but you're not allowed to say right now, so we must...
I do have Chief of Station with Aaron Eckhart. He's not a bad co-star.
Okay. Yeah. Hey.
Real a big fan of his work as well.
It's an action movie, Jesse Johnson, and I play a very interesting character. And Aaron is fantastic.
Oh, Nina, man, I can't wait to hopefully meet you in person one day and get an autograph and see your star on the Hollywood Walk over there. Let's get it done, baby.
But as for Anna, there's one more thing I wondered about. So we know that Anna has an immigrant background.
Yes.
In the film, and you know, she gets adopted into America. She has a lifetime of terrible experiences, but she's rather well versed on the native language, the native legends there. And I wondered, is there something about Anna's past growing up in the old world? And you know, I can't help but like think about your own Romani lifestyle for a while, living in the old country where like a lot of the you know, a lot of people still respect and revere like the old legends, traditions, and superstitions. Does some of that come into play with Anna and her philosophy and her outlook on what's going on around her? Because she seemed pretty invested in the idea of the Wendigo coming to take this terrible man away from her.
Yeah, I think when, you know, everyone knows it, it's a legend. So everyone knows that story where she grew up and they all talk about it. And it's a very common story. It was the director's background. Like everyone knows that. But what I did was, you know, I lived in New York and I lived here and I watched the Jewish community and they're actually practicing it more here in America than they do from where they're from. You know, a lot of when they immigrate, they hold on to their traditions and their religious beliefs and even harder and tighter. So I felt like her immigrating, I'm not one of those, you know, I'm pretty good at adapting, but I felt Anna was clinging on to anything that felt like home. So all of those legends, and that's what she studied. And she probably read all those fairy tales and stories for her kids. And she was probably fascinated by it. Because where she was from in Eastern Europe, there's a lot of tales. There's a lot of dark tales. There's Tolstoy. There's, you know, all of those, you know, and especially in Russia, we worship, you know, the authors, the poets, you know, Alexander Pushkin, Chekhov, all of those. So it's like she comes from that rich background. And I thought that's why she was so into it, too. I did actually think about that when she arrived in America, she held on to all those tales, you know, because I see my gypsy Russian grandma. She's so suspicious. Like when I fly, I can't sit like this because it's bad luck. You know, if I step someone on the toes, they have to step me on the toes. You know, it's like if I sit across the street, I'm like, oh, and I don't believe it. But wait. I can't fly like this because it's bad
luck. I got to ask you. So they do this shit to me in New York back in the day. So if we're walking on the sidewalk and I cross the pole on the other side, do I have to go back behind the pole and you would get on the sidewalk? Are you one of those?
Yeah, I mean,
damn it.
Probably a return.
You mean me when we're like 2 blocks away. You fucked up. You got to walk 2 blocks back. And
I don't believe it, but I just do it just in case.
You kind of can't help it. I love it because I'm such a fan of cinema from around the world. And like I've enjoyed films like Rare Exports and Tula. Some other Slavic films and, you know, Asian films, just films from wherever. They're good films to be seen. And so I love getting the import of the culture that way as well. And so I appreciated seeing that out of Anna as well, even though it wasn't like the major focus of her character. I really like that detail about her.
Yeah, I would tell you, you know, the writer is the director as well. So he wrote it and directed it. And he's French. So he has that French.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
So je ne sais pas.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, he thinks differently. I mean, it's very different doing working with a French director than an American director. It's just very, everything is just very different.
That's when they accent, I would think that they're just a little bit more rude, but who am I to speak? I'm Latino and we speak loud. You know what I mean? So, check this out. Nina, last question here. You know, you've been on a crazy journey. You're doing your thing. Yep. You're a boss. You're a beautiful woman out there just knocking it out in the business right now. What advice would you give to up-and-comers right now based on your journey?
I mean, I would say if you have a backup plan, don't do it. Like, if I had any other talents, trust me, I wouldn't be doing this. I love the art and I love the craft, but I hate the business, and the business will grind you down. Mm. You know, hundreds of auditions you don't get. You're too old, you're too young, you're too fat, you're too skinny, you're too muscular, you're too gay looking, you're not gay enough, you're, what? I mean, you know, I'm not gay, but it's like that it's just like, it starts messing with
you. Get it, there's roles and there are things they want to cast you for.
Yeah, they're going to cast you, you know, it's like, it's very, you know, it's just, you got to really want it, and you got to, I think, really focus on the craft. You got to love the craft. You know, I just focus on the craft, and if they don't want me, I don't care, because I get to live in the shoe, even in those shoes, even if it's just an audition. Mm-hmm. And I don't do it to become rich and famous. I would probably have done something else that would have been a lot easier making money at. I just do it because I love it so much. I love living in these characters' shoes. I love to be challenged. I love the whole aspect of filmmaking. I love creating. I love the people that it attracts. But not on the business side, but the creative ones. And I think the only thing that I wish I would have done differently is have more courage to say no and really truly, you know, go for what I wanted to do. You know, I said yes to a lot of gigs I didn't want to do because they paid and I'm an actor. So you just say yes to everything.
Right.
You know, and now I say no and I play more of the parts that I want to play.
Now, we've all seen, you know, some of our favorite actors like slumming it because, like, you know, got to pay the bills. And you know, like, you kind of get that. Like, you know, for instance, Ron Perlman, bless his soul, everything I've seen him in, like, he just never phones it in, even if it's a crap project. He just gets in there and does, you know, his best work. But you die inside to see him doing that a little bit. So but I get it, you know.
Yeah.
I want to manifest two roles for you right now, where as a comic book geek, let me see if you agree, Bracey. First, in the Marvel U, I think Nina would make an amazing Mystique.
Ooh.
Yes.
In the DCU, based on an action move, and because I love this character, I need to see Nina as Huntress.
Yes, I was just thinking that.
Where we go? Yeah, baby. See, we see you, Nina. We see where you're going. It's like, yo, based on how you're moving on, like, if we could have our dream project for you based on how we've seen you, like, because you are an amazing actress. You got skilled. You got talent. You are out there doing your thing. You are the real deal.
Oh, thank you.
You will fit so perfectly.
Want to see you in a cape doing Krav Maga and shooting people with a crossbow. There we go.
I'm not going to say no to that.
But DC Marvel, you heard. This is what the fans want. Check out Nina Bergman. You know where you check her out? I showed the website before, but like, listen, first of all, check out all her stuff on her Instagram at Nina Bergman. All right? Maybe the links are below too. I'll make it easier, right? But I got to say it because we got to make sure that you guys know about this young lady that is about to, it is a future star. That's it. All right. She's going to be top. She's going to be winning Academy Awards real soon. You have a couple of years. Don't you worry, because she's getting out there doing her thing. Yes. And go visit the website at ninabergman.com. If y'all don't believe me, so you can see her videos and things that she's done. An amazing young lady for real. You know, I'm a fan. I love this movie. I love the Wonder Woman short. I want to see her in these roles. So if anywhere I could help, let's make it happen. And of course, you know, a big salute to my big homie Bracey. You can check him out at X, you know, Mr. Happy himself, Bracey 452. And of course, you know, as it's screaming below, the real Omega everywhere, Comic Crusaders just about everywhere. YouTube is Comic Crusaders, bro. That's the stuff you do. Nina, yo, for real, thank you so much for your time. You are an inspiration. You are a hero. I really can't wait to see what is coming up in the Bergman verse, baby, because I know it's going to be spectacular. All right? And that, I give a big whip. Thank you, Nina. Thank you, Bracey. Thank you, Crusaders. Especially you guys on X, over 80 viewers. Thank you for your support. Hasta la próxima. Hey!